What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. On this beautiful, somewhat chilly, have the window cracked here, Monday night. Just wasted the last 3 hours watching the Monday night football game. Might have sprinkled a couple hundred dollars on the Bears money line. That did not go well. I have a recommendation. Do not gamble on the Bears. I promise you, it will not go well. Have a couple times this year, lost money. Do not do it. Just words of wisdom from this guy who's lost some cash. We'll dive into the Monday Night Football game off the top. I have a lot of things I'm pretty excited to talk about. Carson Wentz, some thoughts on Jameis Winston, the Miami Dolphins and Brian Flores, the throw Kyler Murray made. Obviously, the Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff is my Instagram page. Slide up in those DMs, get your question answered on the show, the people show, we like to call it. Also, if you guys could, I would greatly appreciate it. Leave a review, Three and Out Podcast. Subscribe if you're listening on Collins' feed. Subscribe to the separate feed. Leave a little review if you like the show, 5-star. If you don't, 1-star, I don't really care. But I prefer 5-star. I think it helps us sell the show. Oh, I know it does. So keep doing that. Everyone that has, I greatly appreciate it. And yeah, but let's dive into Monday Night Football. One thing is clear in 2020. I say it all the time. Like, if you're in business and you don't have an online presence, you're losing. You could have a lawnmower business. If you're not on Facebook and Instagram marketing that thing, you're behind the curve. That there's just no doubt about it. Let alone if you do what I do, you have to be online. You don't have a choice. I don't love being on social media all the time. And really, I've pulled back, but I still have to be active. It's just part of the gig. It's part of the way the consumer consumes, you know, and it helps me grow my business. Just part of the deal. I say it, the best part about America, no matter what you do, you could, like I said, you could be a landscaper. You could start from nothing, have zero clients. If you get involved, there's never been an easier time to grow a business. It's just the internet. I mean, it's great, but you got to have a presence on the internet, no matter what you do. And football's the same thing. You have to have a quarterback. You have to. You don't have to have a great defense. You don't even have to have a great offensive line. We saw for years, Seattle, awful offensive line. They had Russell Wilson. Earlier in the decade, Roethlisberger, I vividly remember when I first got to the NFL, his offensive line was terrible. He was getting sacked all the time. It didn't matter. He was elite. He dominated. They dominated. You can get away with having a bad offensive line. The Bears and the Minnesota Vikings offensive line is not great. But the Bears' offensive line is putrid. Their biggest problem is their quarterback. They haven't been able to find a quarterback basically in my entire life. They had a couple moments with Cutler, but really not really. Right now, Nick Foles, knock on wood, he's okay. Looked like he had a bad back injury at the end of the game. He got carted off. But before that, he's a bad football player. He had incredible moments a couple years ago when he won the Super Bowl. And then the following year when Carson Wentz got hurt and he won a playoff game, ironically, at Soldier Field, he's terrible. He is not any good. For all of us that watch basically all the games all weekend, he's easily one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. He can't move. He does not throw darts. All of his balls are loopy. Kirk Cousins, who I have been critical of for throughout the years, bad athlete, can't make anything out of nothing. His arm looks like Jay Cutler compared to Nick Foles. Kirk Cousins, do you know what the Bears would do for Kirk Cousins? And Kirk Cousins is as average as the day is long. They would die to have Kirk Cousins. Now listen, Nagy's my guy. I've known him for a long time. I'm rooting for the Bears. Am I biased on this one? Yes, a little bit. Can I admit his offense is unwatchable? Yes, I can. But he gave up play calling tonight. He literally let someone else call the plays. Nothing changed. You know why? Because Bill Walsh or Andy Reid could call plays with these quarter with Nick Foles and with that offensive line, but mainly Nick Foles, it would not matter. This is not the Nick Foles that Doug Peterson won the Super Bowl with. Nobody, let me repeat, nobody could win with this. Because clearly the Bears have one of the best defenses in the league. They have excellent special teams. I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson, dude's a beast. But you just watch on the same field. Like, one thing quarterbacks, and I've heard Aaron Rodgers say this before, what a dumbass question it is, and he's right. When the media says, like, when you know, when Tampa's playing Green Bay, and they go, Aaron, what's it like to play Tom Brady? And Aaron's like, I don't fucking play Tom Brady. I play quarterback. He plays quarterback. We're never on the field at the same time. That's 100% true. But one thing you can do when a team plays another team, when Kyler Murray plays Josh Allen, you see the ebb and flow of the two guys. So you get to kind of rate them off each other, how they look, who's better than the other guy. They don't play each other, but when they play on the same field, it's just the ebb and flow of the two talents. That's part of evaluating the quarterback. And you just watch tonight. Again, Cousins is average as the day is long. Unless you're Kyle Shanahan and you have a secret man crush on him and you want him to be the quarterback of the 49ers. Thank God Minnesota keeps winning and he won't be the quarterback of the 49ers in 2021. But compared to Nick Foles, it's not close. He has a better arm. He's a more accurate passer. Foles stinks. And as we know in the NFL, and I'm seeing it with the Niners right now, when you play with shitty quarterbacks, and that's what Nick Mullins is, you lose. You just lose. Even if your defense is okay, even if you have some good offensive skill guys, it does not matter. It's the ultimate, it's never been more important. When I was growing up in the 90s, even though I'd say most of the good teams had like Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but you get by with elite run game and a great defense. You can't do that now. Scoring is too important. You have to move the ball down the field. It's a passing-oriented league now. The rules are there. The wide receivers, you can't hit them. Hell, the Bears have talent at wide receiver. They draft a second-round tight end, the kid from Notre Dame. Jimmy Graham's made plays this year. Allen Robinson's a stud. Miller, in theory, should be decent. And it doesn't matter. Foles can't hit water for you sitting in a boat. Again, I'm not trying to beat up on the guy. I know people that know him. I think he's a great guy. I mean, I've heard his character is like Tim Tebow level. He's an elite character guy. But in the NFL, when the game starts, character and all that shit gets thrown out the window. You're either good enough or you're not. And I saw this thing that went viral this weekend about Urban Meyer talking about, like, he hates it when coaches say this guy's not good enough. And he says, like, especially in the NFL. And I kind of wanted to be like, Urban, I'm going to disagree with you. I worked in the NFL. In your perspective, when you're at Ohio State and you're at Florida, you have the best players. Every game you play in, unless you're playing the other best team in the country, every player at every position is better than the other guy. In the NFL, that's not the case. There are massive talent discrepancies. In theory, is everyone a pro on the field? For sure. But is the talent gap between Nick Foles and when they play the Packers or the Detroit Lions at quarterback a mile wide? Hell yes. You saw it tonight and they were playing Kirk Cousins. The talent gap in the NFL and the pro leagues is big. You don't get an unlimited amount of first round picks. And the Bears, to get Khalil Mack, sold a couple first round picks. And Ryan Pace hasn't done a good job of getting offensive linemen. And Nagy or whoever handpicked Nick Foles to come because they knew him. And I get it, the options were limited. I would have gone a different direction. But I get it, he knows the offense. It's irrelevant now because they have Nick Foles, and he's terrible. Now, I don't know what his injury is going to be. Maybe he doesn't come back the rest of the season. But I think Mitch Trubisky's really bad, too. I would just take Mitch Trubisky's better than this version of Nick Foles. You can't function with this version of Nick Foles. It shows you why the Vikings have got back on track. They have an identity on offense, obviously, with a great running back in Dalvin Cook. But Cousins can make plays. They might be some basic plays, but he can make legit throws. 20-yard rope over the middle, a nice out route. I don't know, he can just do this thing called move the chains, get first downs. The Bears are just three and out, 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 three and out. It's just, it's not possible to play football when your quarterback is god-awful. It's just not possible. And look at the Bears. Like, if I put Aaron Rodgers on the Bears, what's their record now? 5-5? What are they? 8-2? I mean, they dominate. And their offensive line would still be just as crappy. But they have good wide receivers, their defense, and their special teams. So, you can say Matt Nagy sucks, but we saw another guy calling plays tonight, and nothing, if anything, they got worse. Like, their offense was dramatically worse. They had 130 yards of offense versus coming into the game. I would say for most of the season, it's been one of the worst defenses in the league, especially one of the worst passing defenses in the league, the Minnesota Vikings. Mike Zimmer, you know, destroyed them tonight. Mike Zimmer has been running A-gap blitzes. I'm not Bill Parcells here, but his scheme hasn't changed. So when he's running the A-gap blitz, run a slant. You know why? Because if you watch the Queen's Gambit, you know where they the chess game, where you put pieces there and a piece here, there's no one over the middle of the field. So if we took the little chess pieces, when he blitzes both linebackers up the gut, what does that mean? The middle of the field's wide open. What's a route to get to the middle of the field? I don't know. A quick slant? Run a crossing route? Do something. Get a guy over the middle of the field. I'm screaming at my TV like, this isn't rocket scientists. This isn't, obviously, I'm not a rocket scientist. This isn't rocket science. Just an embarrassing effort. And I don't, we can keep blaming the coaches, but eventually, in the pros, in college, you're at Ohio State, you're at Alabama, you can blame the coach, you're getting five-star guys. This is the NFL. There's a big difference between every player. There's a big difference between DeAndre Hopkins and, I don't know, the starting wide receiver for the Houston Texans. Or DK Metcalf and, you know, some random dude on the New York Giants. There just is. It's like there's a big difference right now between this version of Nick Foles and basically every other quarterback in the league. Okay, there's so much going on. Let's just try to start somewhere. And Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles. And just the entire situation around the franchise. When it comes to their highest paid asset in franchise history. When you also factor in what they invested in to get him, right? They traded several picks to move up in the draft. They have never spent more money and allocated more resources to get an individual player and build around an individual player. And I tried to put my owner hat on. If I owned the Eagles like Jeffrey Lurie, what would I be thinking right now? And the reality is, it's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes, things don't work out. For whatever reason, right? Timing, money, sometimes egos, personalities, whatever. People don't mesh. And when you are the most expensive asset in any business, and hell, you could call Carson somewhat of a liability. And I've supported him. I've said over and over, the majority of the teams in the league would be lined up to get him. I believe that's true. Now, I can also say, independent of that, he's been a disaster. Last night, on Sunday night, before I went to bed, I threw it up on my iPad and just watched. I didn't watch the game live because I was watching the Masters. I wasn't going to watch Eagles-Giants over Dustin Johnson, especially when I had a little cash on him. Thank you, Dustin. And I watched the game back. It's just like, he looks bad. Now, their defense is terrible. They have a lot of injuries. But Carson Wentz is not working out. And if you put your owner hat on, if you own a business, and the thing you invest the most in, right? Whatever that is. If you own a brewery, and it's all the machines that make the beer, and they're not working. And that's whatever you've spent the most of. If you own just any company, whatever you spend the most on in that company, if that doesn't work out for you, you have a problem. It's no different in pro sports, right? We see it in baseball when you buy a guy $300-400 million. That guy's got to be elite. We see it in the NBA. If you max out a player and that guy is not a max player, we have issues. In football, for the most part, it's just quarterbacks. Now, you can overpay other players, but it usually doesn't cripple your team. But when you overpay or pay a lot to a quarterback, and listen, we can argue all day long. They took care of Carson Wentz before he'd actually done anything. I had no problem with it because they bet on him getting better, and they bet on the market continuing to go up. This was before Corona, and they go, you know, in 5 years, that number's going to be 50. We'll have our guy on a cheap contract. Corona hits. The Eagles then come together, and the season happens, and they look terrible. And if I'm Jeffrey Lurie right now, I'm asking myself, this is not working out. And the one thing over the history of time we've learned, it's usually not the player's fault when they're the highest paid player on the team. Not because it actually isn't their fault, but you can't cut that guy. You're not going to trade Carson Wentz. Too much dead cap, it makes no financial sense. So the one thing I think you're asking yourself is, are him and Doug Peterson, is this working out? And if you take a step back, you'd be like, Middlecoff, they made the playoffs 3 years in a row. And listen, I like Doug. And this is, I don't have any inside information. I haven't talked to any of these guys with the Eagles all year long. I don't usually mess with people I know in the league when shit's hitting the fan. And I just, listen, I don't know Jeffrey Lurie, so I couldn't even ask him if I wanted to. But it crossed my mind, could Doug Peterson be in trouble? And most people, I think, around football would say, that's insane. He won the Super Bowl a couple years ago for the first time in franchise history. He made the playoffs the following year and then won a road game. And then he even made the playoffs last year. And if I put my owner hat on, which I think you have to do in these conversations, right? This is how we have to talk about it. This is a big business, billion-dollar business. You're paying this guy $150 million. And you're paying a coach, probably, even if Doug's making pretty good cash, probably buy him out for $30. So, you know, you're probably going to tend to lean with the dude making $150. We got to fix that. And right now, the head coach, who is a quarterback guy and the offensive play caller, can't fix him because he keeps getting worse. So I have to ask myself, is he the right guy moving forward? And if I look back at 2 years ago, well, we won a playoff game, but part of that was because Carson got injured. He wasn't playing well. Foles came in at the end of the season, and it took a missed field goal off the uprights. And last year, we made the playoffs. A big reason we made the playoffs is our division was so shitty. We were not a quote-unquote playoff team in any other division. We wouldn't even have been close. We won all those games at the end of the season against that bad division. Played Washington, played New York, obviously beat the Cowboys, stink. Like, those are the teams we beat to get in the playoffs. I think you can have the conversation while you still have Carson Wentz young, and is he fixable? I don't know. Maybe he's not, and maybe I'm just wrong. He's never going to be a good player, and there's a chance. I still believe in the guy, and I still am adamant the teams would be more than interested. The Niners would take him yesterday. Does he have issues? Of course he does. But that's why the Kyle Shanahans, the Sean McVays, the Sean Paytons, the Andy Reids, those type guys, the way they think, the Arians, I want to make that better. And right now, Doug Peterson, for whatever reason, can't fix it. At all. It's getting worse. I watched that game in my bed last night, or two nights ago. I guess it was last night. If you're listening to this, it was 2 nights ago. And I thought they kind of got worked. Like, they got pushed around. Now, I've been saying over and over, the Giants are good. And I think I saw someone on Twitter, maybe they said this on the broadcast. Dave Gettleman was telling the broadcasters, the people around the league were telling him they were the best 2-7 team that we've ever seen. And it's like, Dave, I wouldn't necessarily be bragging about that. But I do think he has somewhat of a point, even though that's a laughable comment, that they are a tough team. Like, if you're not playing well, they can beat you. Hell, they almost beat the Bucs 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, or whatever, on Monday Night Football. But it's starting to kind of circulate that maybe the most important asset currently in the franchise, and you could argue in franchise history, in Carson Wentz, when you factor in how much they paid for it, the head coach can't fix him. And he's had time now. It's just not working out. Is it their personalities? Is it they don't see things eye to eye? There's definitely a chance that Carson Wentz can't be fixed. But here's what I know if you just look back at the history of the way sports work. There will be another coach that gets an opportunity to figure that out before they just kick Carson Wentz the can down the road. Because before they just go, you know, the Carson Wentz experiment didn't work, someone else is going to coach him. And I don't know. I have no inside information on this. But I think you have to start asking yourself, is Doug Peterson's job status in a little bit of trouble? One thing, you know, I've learned over the years, when I was in my 20s, I wasn't very good at savings. I would imagine most guys, girls, whoever, just most younger people are not. Then the older you get, the more maturity you have. You realize, you know, and older people, if you're in the business world and have mentors, they tell you, you want to have cash on hand. Now, sometimes you're just not in the financial position. You're not making enough money. Your bills are higher than the money coming in. You can't save. But I found, even in tough times, if I put 10% away, like every $1,000 I get, put $100 away. And things, I mean, as it's going to help as we go into this crazy winter with all these lockdowns, I was able to just put some extra cash away that I would never have done 5-10 years ago. And I'm very cognizant of that because I want to be in positions when things, whether it's stock market, whether it's real estate, become cheap, I have money. And they say cash is king, but it's hard to accumulate cash unless you make a lot of money if you're not really smart. And listen, it doesn't mean you can just accumulate $1 million. I mean, if you're making $80,000 and you can just put $1,000 away, just a little bit away, it always helps for a rainy day. That shit is so true. And I'm a big believer on it. And I try to be really consistent when I get some money to put some away. Now, ultimately, I'm going to use that money when I find something that I want to buy, but I think about it when the cash comes in, is to put a little away. And it's different. I mean, I'm in a, you know, working for myself, I got to pay quarterly income taxes, so part of it's that too. But I'm talking about money that I can actually keep after the taxes are spent. And you just want to have a backup plan. And I saw it, like, we're just going through the same thing right now in society that we went through in April, May. The difference is we know way more about the virus. But if I would have had a lot of cash on hand when all the, and it's easy to say now, because when the stock market just plummeted, we didn't know if, like, the world was going to end. We didn't know. And I don't think it's going to happen this time around. But it would have behooved anyone to have a lot of cash on hand. It behooves anyone to have a contingency plan. There's a reason that we pay for insurance, even though I've always said, I think insurance companies are the great racket, in the legal racket in America, because I pay them every month, and then the moment I get into a car accident, you know, my appliances go down, you know, I need surgery, my payments are up the ass, and they don't ever want to give me what they've promised to give me despite me paying them. But that's a whole nother conversation. I'm sure everyone has their crazy insurance companies. But again, there's a reason we have it. Because clearly, if you have health insurance, it helps when you go to the doctor, right? When you have car insurance and you get into a car accident, it helps having it. Now, it might be not, sometimes it's difficult getting that money from them, but eventually, if you fight hard enough, you can get the cash from them. And there's a reason that good teams have backup quarterbacks. Because, or attempt to have. Because when you have star quarterbacks, especially when they're older, if they go down, you are immediately shit out of luck. And I think the Saints proved last year that having money in the bank, aka paying Teddy Bridgewater like $7 million to be their backup, was genius. Remember, Drew Brees hurt his thumb in Los Angeles, and I immediately thought, I'm like, they're screwed, they're done. They had a contingency plan, and they were fine. And it turns out Teddy Bridgewater was good, made himself a lot of money. He's now a starting quarterback. He ended up getting, you know, $20 million a year. They had no choice. They had to let him go. This year, knowing that their quarterback, unlike Tom Brady, this guy misses some games. Like, Drew Brees has gotten banged up now 2 years in a row. Information comes out. He has broken ribs, punctured lungs. Like, he's in shambles. In watching the Niners-Saints game yesterday, it was hard to tell exactly what happened to him, but you could see the pain on his face. He was not in a good spot. And they didn't just go, oh, let's bring out the undrafted free agent, or let's bring in this seventh rounder that's probably going to suck. They rolled out Jameis Winston. And say what you want about Jameis Winston, at the end of the day, he was the number one overall pick. And he was deserving of that, you know, of that selection. He then went on to be a productive passer for Bruce Arians. He just threw a lot of picks. Now, the one thing I'd say with Bruce Arians is his quarterbacks throw a lot of picks. He's cool with it. He throws the ball downfield. Well, the Saints' offense is not built like that. They don't throw the ball down the field. They don't have players. They don't roll out two DeSean Jacksons. The best player on their team is a running back that catches the ball in screens, wheel routes, and little short routes all within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. Their second best player is a wide receiver that isn't that fast, that runs slants, hitches, and outs, and he can dominate in Michael Thomas. Unlike Godwin and Evans, who are deep threats, who are guys you push the ball down the field, that's not how the Saints operate. So Jameis Winston, who has had red flags on and off the field, and I said the moment that he had the thing with the Uber driver, me personally, I was out, but I've never disputed his talent. You just have to corral him. Well, Sean Payton's the first perfect coach to corral him. And they have been smart. They've given the blueprint of all these good teams. Like, if Rodgers went down, Packers would be screwed. If Russell Wilson went down, Seattle would be fucked. I watched it with the Niners this year. Jimmy Garoppolo, who wasn't even playing that well, went down. They rolled out Nick Mullins. He's an undrafted free agent. Sources say he's not any good. Jared Goff, don't even know who the backup is. They would be in trouble. We've seen this now. When you don't have a backup quarterback, Blaine Gabbert is the backup quarterback in Tampa Bay. Tom Brady were to get hurt, game, set, match, Tampa has no shot. And I'm not saying the Saints are just going to win. If Drew Brees can't come back, they win the whole thing with Jameis. But at least they have a fighting chance. And I give Sean Payton credit for understanding that he needs some cash in the bank. Because most teams don't think that way or think they have enough. The Kyle Shanahan's like, we got Mullins and C.J. Beathard. For whatever reason, the Niners keep two backup quarterbacks. It turns out that's the equivalent of having like $300 in your bank account. It's like, bro, that wouldn't even pay for my HOA fees. Like, you can't win a game. And when you have, we saw last year with the Steelers. Now, I give them credit. They were drafting guys, just turned it out. Dobbs stunk, Mason stunk. Those guys weren't any good. But they kept investing third and fourth round picks in those guys. You always invest picks in those guys. Because it's the most important position you can have. Because if the guy does go down, you need another guy. It's not like defensive line or wide receivers. You can just work a group by committee. It's one individual player. And when I was in Philadelphia, we signed Michael Vick to a big deal. Andy Reid wanted to make Alex Smith the highest paid backup in the league. We were really, really aggressive. Jim Harbaugh convinced him to come back. Andy, ironically, ended up getting this guy by a trade a couple years later. But he understood you need a good backup. You have to have a good backup. Now, it's a little more difficult in their situation once you pay Mahomes huge money. But they have a veteran backup who they proved last year Matt Moore could win a game. Matt Moore is a solid backup. Most teams do not have that. They don't at all. The Raiders' backup quarterback is Nathan Peterman. If Derek goes down, the Raiders are done. Put a fork in him. It's over. I'll give the Browns credit. Case Keenum's their backup quarterback. Hell, he might be better than Baker. But this is why the Saints are a high-level operation. This is why Sean Payton makes huge cash. This is why they always go to the playoffs. This is why they'll go back again, whether Drew Brees comes back or not. Because they had a contingency plan. They paid for the insurance. And they got a really, really talented player. Right? Who's flawed, but he's more talented than every backup in the league. That's for sure. And they're built to, you know, to limit his greatest mistakes, which are terrible passes down, you know, 20 plus yards down the field. They don't do that there. They dump the ball off and they throw slants and quick outs and ins. Like, that's their offense. And it's proven it works. I actually think they'll be pretty good with Jameis Winston. Let's shift to the Miami Dolphins. And I might have to take a couple L's because twofold. One, before we even saw Tua, I was very down on them not playing him. I thought it was stupid. It didn't make any sense because he was dressing for every game. He was not in sweats. And we saw Burrow, we saw Herbert. It's like, why are they waiting? And ultimately, I think it's been proven they had a plan. And we're going to dive into the head coach who clearly stuck with that plan. And I'm a huge believer in I think the media has never been more irrelevant. You just don't have to listen to them. It just doesn't matter. But I also think there is, like, the fans and everyone is like, why aren't this guy playing? And I thought the whole time it got to the point where maybe even the owner was like, especially once Herbert starts making plays, why isn't our guy playing if he's healthy enough to play? They ultimately put him in the bye week. And that first week, I was pretty down on him. I was like, you know, I don't really see it. These last couple weeks, but especially the game against the Chargers on Sunday, I'm pretty impressed with Tua, just in terms of how fast he gets rid of the ball, his accuracy, and he's not exactly playing with O.J. McDuffie. You know, I don't know, I'm trying to, like, I was like going to rattle off like three or four sweet Miami Dolphins wide receivers. I don't even know him. I mean, DeVante Parker is okay, whatever. Never lived up to his first round billing. Actually pretty talented, but they don't have that much talent. Jakeem Grant, the little guy from Texas Tech, is solid. The tight end they drafted, I think, from Penn State, Gilsecki, is actually not bad. I like that guy. But they are not rolling out. Like, Kenyon Drake, I'm watching the Cardinal game. That guy's really good. Well, he's not on their team anymore because they traded him. And I assume once they traded everyone, this team was really going to suck. And I've just been wrong. And I think Tua, he's not ever going to be as physically gifted as Justin Herbert. And that's the guy we're comparing him to because ultimately they chose Tua over Herbert. But he has a really quick release. He's much more fast twitch, let's say, than Baker Mayfield, two smaller guys. Everything's smoother about his game. Now, you know, in fairness to Baker Mayfield, he's played in some monsoons. Tua's played in a controlled environment in Miami, but that's part of the deal with playing for the Dolphins. You get to play in warm weather. Now, eventually, if the Jets ever get good, obviously the Bills and the Patriots, those games can get really cold. Historically, the Dolphins have not been good in those games, but we're jumping ahead here, putting the cart before the horse here. Let's walk before we run. And what I saw the game against the Chargers from Tua had me excited. Like, do I think he's going to be some all-time great? I'm not going to make some crazy statement about where he's going, but he showed he can be a good player in this league for sure. He has talent. We knew that, but it's one thing to see a guy on an NFL field. But the most impressive thing about this organization has not been the quarterback. It's the coach. When they started trading everyone, and I said this, when they trade Minka Fitzpatrick, when they trade Laremy Tunsil, like the whole point of the draft is ultimately to acquire guys like that. Like, you got Laremy Tunsil. That's a good thing. You want that guy on your team. You got Minka Fitzpatrick because he fell in the draft. That's a good thing. He's a dominant defensive player. You don't trade those guys away. It's why when the Raiders trade Khalil Mack, it's like the whole point of the draft is to have Khalil Mack, not then trade him for more draft picks. Because, you know, they say whatever, a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. Like, you got the guy. Now, but they did it. So once you do it, it's water under the bridge. It is what it is. And they have pivoted in terms of they're 9-5 in their last 14 games. And they're 6-3 this year, and it's a real 6-3. Like, they dominated that game against the Chargers. They were in complete control. Their defense, they don't have that many guys I've even heard of. I know they signed Van Noy. Their corners are actually pretty good. I mean, they signed Byron Jones from the Cowboys. They obviously have the Howard, who was already on the team when Flores got there. Like, their DBs, their two corners are good, and Van Noy's solid. But they create pressure. They tackle well. You watch their team every week, and I really noticed it when they came out and played the Niners with Fitzpatrick, and they beat the brakes off the 49ers. I was like, oh, my God. This team is, you know, they come to play. And when you come to play every week, that's a reflection of the head coach. And right now, say what you want. And historically, we always go, well, guys leave Belichick and they fall apart. They try to be him. They try to be him and it never works. You can't be Belichick. Patricia can't be Belichick. Make some practice outside, even though they're playing indoors. Bill O'Brien, just complete asshole. Right? We just go down the list. Romeo Crennel, just not a good coach. Good assistant coach, not a good head coach. And just like, bang, but Josh McDaniels, he tried to be like the little dictator. Didn't work in Denver. They had to like tell him to get the hell out of there. This is working. I don't know if Brian Flores took better notes when he was around Bill. I don't know if he stayed truer to his personality. I don't know if he's just a star coach, regardless if he had been about around Belichick or not. But this guy's the real deal. Just watch his teams. Your team is a reflection of your head coach. And it's pretty consistent. Like, the good teams are a reflection. The Steelers are good. Why they got Mike Tomlin? The Chiefs have been good for 7 years. Why they have had Andy Reid? The Saints have been good for 15 years. Why? They've had Sean Payton. Like, since McVay got there, the Rams win a lot. Why? Sean McVay is good. It's pretty clear. Like, the Dolphins are a very credible operation. Why? Brian Flores. Like, players have changed. Coaches, you know, organization, people in the organization have changed. It's just, it's the coach. Because I'm watching the Dolphins for the last however many years, they're always the same. They're like, they're not terrible, but they're not good. Like, they're just good now. And if you look at their schedule, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they're 9-3. Now, I don't know if they have enough talent to just beat everyone that they should beat. Like, they'll beat the Jets. But, like, the Broncos, a game against the Jags, you know, hell, even when they play the Raider, like, they're going to just lose a game or two. But I think there's a decent chance this team gets 10 wins. And if they get to 10 wins, they're in the playoffs. And if Brian Flores makes the playoffs, I don't care how many games Mike Tomlin wins. I don't care how many games Andy Reid wins. We know those two coaches. They're elite. Super Bowl champions. They're big time. They're $10 million guys. I didn't think that about Brian Flores. But if he wins 10 games with this team and I had a vote, I wouldn't even hesitate Brian Flores to be the coach of the year. And I think both those two guys... And, you know, you can go to like Pete Carroll, Sean McVay, like, yeah, well, Brian Flores is doing, holy hell. Hell, the NFC West, just ask Pete Carroll, Sean McVay, and Kyle Shanahan. He beat the Rams and he beat the Niners. He played right there with Seattle. He beat the Cardinals, who were pretty good. This guy went 3-1 against the AFC West, or excuse me, the NFC West. That is really, really impressive. I did not expect them to be this good. And the blow up, it worked. So whatever the notes he took when he was with Belichick, maybe he has a photographic memory like Andrew Luck. Everything Belichick said, he remembered, but he kind of puts his own spin on it. It's just working. Because you can't watch the Miami Dolphins. Boom, punt blocked. Boom, sack. Boom, easy touchdown drive. It's like everything they do is just pretty impressive. I watched two teams. The Chargers have much more talent than the Dolphins. Chargers are poorly coached. Special teams mistake. Poor offensive play calling. Just a disaster. Dolphins are the complete opposite. Well-coached, overachieve, play hard, have coaching advantages on just situational spots in the game. They don't waste downs. They block punts. It was a clinic on, yeah, that's a well-run team. That's a disastrous team. Say what you want about Stephen Ross. Like, he got this one right. Dean Spanos, the other side, has a disaster on his hands. So, Brian Flores, I might have been a little quick to, like, kind of crush Tua, but it was one game. That's what we do when we talk about football. We overreact to stuff. But Brian Flores is the story of the Miami Dolphins, and I don't even think it's close. Before, I'm sure many people know this, but some I know we have a lot of new listeners. Before I got in the NFL, I was a graduate assistant at Fresno State in the late 2000s, right after I graduated college. But one of the reasons like I had somewhat of a connection there was my cousin had played there, and I had family that grew up there in the 80s and the 90s. And my uncle, who's a businessman in that area, was a big part of the football program, was very close, and they have a close personal friend who's now a friend of mine who played on the team in the late 90s and was best friends with Lane Kiffin. And Lane Kiffin used to babysit some of my cousins with this other guy who actually coached for Fresno State, and he had a brother that played at Stanford. And just there was a connection there. And then I got to know people at Fresno State, one of the assistant coaches named Tim Skipper, who was on that team, who was also very, very close with Lane Kiffin. I actually think they were roommates. And I always heard these Lane Kiffin stories. And then I think my second year at Fresno State, me and Tim Skipper, Lane Kiffin was named the USC head coach, and we went down to SC and watched a practice. So we BS'd with Lane a little bit. Tim did way more than me. I just kind of watched from afar. But I've followed Lane's career very, very closely, partly because I just know a lot of people that know him. I met him a couple times when I was scouting really briefly. But he was a different human when he was at SC and I went through. When I went through USC, I saw a guy who was pretty negative, who you could feel the stress on his body. And I always had people, those Fresno State crew that knew him really well, they said, listen, Lane's a different cat, but he can coach, and he knows football. He's a junkie. And I've always held that behind, you know, just in the back of my head, even when things were really bad. And I watched it really closely at USC. They underachieved. The offense was ugly. It was just bad. And I felt like he was just not comfortable in his own skin for whatever reason. And maybe that's because he became so famous so fast, so much was given to him, and he didn't have any success on the level that I think people thought that he might go to, right? Went to Tennessee, then he came to SC, and it was just a disaster. Ultimately got fired on the tarmac. But then Nick Saban threw out the lifeline, and it changed his life. He became the offensive coordinator there. They won a national championship. He went to become the head coach at the little school in Florida. I think they won the league 2 out of 3 years. And he's just become very comfortable with himself. And listen, we all don't become comfortable in our own skin at the same time. Some people are comfortable in their own skin at 18. Good-looking dude who's talented at stuff, who's dating the best-looking babe at school. Some people don't become comfortable in their own skin until 50. And maybe they kind of figure out what they like and their life changed for the better. I think in the last couple years, definitely in the Saban era when he was at Alabama, Lane started to develop that. And I really think once he left Nick Saban for FAU, Florida Atlantic, Florida International, whatever the little Florida school he coached at, he became very confident in his own abilities to win. I always say this, when I went to school at Cal Poly, I didn't learn that much, but the one thing I remember is the school motto was pretty simple: learn by doing. And I'm a big believer in that. That's why I'm not that big of a believer in academia. I don't learn from you just drawing shit on the board. I learn by actually doing it. You can tell me about a million different things. Once I do it, now I'm not saying I'm going to be good at it, but at least I might be able to pick it up when I actually do it. And I think when Lane went back out on his own after he realized his flaws and also improved when he was around Nick, he realized, I'm not only good at this, I just need to be true to who I am, and I'm going to be fine. Because now he's at Ole Miss. I think Lane Kiffin is becoming one of the better football personalities in college or pro. I'm sure many of you saw that video go viral of them dial up that big play, him being basically on the 20-yard line where his offense was. The dude's wide open. Lane puts his hand up to signal touchdown while he's on the sideline. His quarterback throws the dude the ball like 40 yards down the field. Lane takes off, throws his clipboard play sheet 30 feet in the air, runs down to the other 20-yard line as the guy's walking to the end zone, and gives a fist pump. I think the number one thing for anyone to have success at whatever they do, you have to be comfortable in your own skin. When you try to be someone else, when you try to emulate someone else, it doesn't work. At the end of the day, Lane Kiffin is not Nick Saban. But he can take some of the things that Nick Saban taught him and implement that into his coaching. Nick Saban would never do that. Lane should. Lane likes that. I found, like, God, that's pretty cool. You should celebrate some of these things. Football, like, is so hard. Success in anything is so difficult. I don't think we spend enough time celebrating. You don't always need to be doom and gloomer, even when things are good. Nick excels in that. So does Belichick. But I think celebrating wins is a big deal. And I think Lane now at Ole Miss is just really, really come into his own. And his team is only going to get better. And listen, if Dabo Swinney, whenever Nick retires, he's, you know, 68, 69, 67 years old, he's not going to coach for, I'd put the over-under on like 2.5 years. Maybe next year, maybe 2 more years. He's trying to win another national championship. If he were to win a national championship, he'd probably just retire. If Dabo Swinney turns Alabama down, and Dabo Swinney, for those of you who don't know, went to Alabama. I'm sure many people listening do know that. But he's got a pretty good thing at Clemson. And he's got this quarterback, DJ, who I've talked about before, who's going to be a star. Like he makes $10 million. He's got an assistant coaches that make $2.5 million as coordinator. He's basically got Alabama at Clemson. He does not need to leave. And you know what? He probably won't, because he could be the Bear Bryant at Clemson. And he's on pace to be that guy. So if he turns down Alabama, which I would imagine that'd be their first decision, why wouldn't Alabama go after Lane Kiffin? Now, if this in a couple years, Lane's got to win a little bit, but he knows the system. He's a Saban guy. They had success there. He's now in the conference, having success. Again, assuming that he just has some success. And success at Ole Miss is not, you know, getting to the playoffs. Success at Ole Miss is 8-9 wins. Like, Dan Mullen, to me, never needed to win 11 games at Mississippi State. When Dan Mullen started to win 7-8, I said, that's a big boy coach. Gets to Florida, starts kicking everyone's ass. When you go to shitty programs and you take them from 3-4 wins to 8-9 wins, when you're playing teams that you have no business beating, I noticed this when I was watching Washington State play Oregon. And Mike Leach, when I was scouting and I went through Pullman, Washington, I went through every school on the West Coast. And I remember going to Oregon, going to SC, even UCLA. And it's like, God, this is so badass. You go to Colorado, even Utah. I was like, this is sweet. Then you go to Washington, Seattle. You're like, this place is badass. You know, Sark, and they were cool. They were building these sweet facilities. And then you go to Pullman, Washington. You have absolutely no business winning in Pullman, Washington. And Mike Leach went there and started winning every single year. To me, winning 8-9 games at Washington State is just as good as winning 11-12 at Oregon. Because that's what you should be able, that's the max you should be able to. You have no business competing with Oregon. You have no business competing with USC. Just like Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss has no business competing with LSU and Alabama. Zero. And probably even Texas A&M. The resources they have, that he doesn't. So if he can just, and Auburn, if he can just take down some of these teams, like he should never beat Alabama while he's at Ole Miss. But if he can take out an A&M, this LSU team he'll probably beat, but just if they're good next year in like one of these years, like to me, it just shows he's a big time coach. And Alabama should just go after Lane Kiffin. Who else are they hiring? You wouldn't hire Kirby Smart. He can't develop an offense. Their offense is a joke. I had someone DM me the other night. They're like, what do you think Kirby Smart, why can't Kirby Smart figure it out? I said, well, he's a defensive guy. He had nothing to do with recruiting the offensive players at Alabama. I mean, he had Justin Fields and he went with Fromm. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. And here's the other problem for Kirby Smart. Florida now with Dan Mullen's big time. His teams are going to ball. He was the offensive guy for, I don't know, Urban Meyer. Remember Dak Prescott? Remember for a split second when Mississippi State was number one in the country? That was him. And now he's got Florida, which is way easier to recruit. He basically, Mississippi State to Florida is like, you know, I'm at this mom and pop electronic shop. Right, I got this little electronic shop right downtown, and then he like went to IBM or Dell or Apple. They're like, it's on like Donkey Kong. Florida's gonna be big time. As long as Saban's there, Florida will probably now become the second best team in the conference. Dan Mullen's better coach than Ed Ogeron. I think we all, even the biggest LSU guys, you'd admit, Ed Orgeron is very dependent on other coaches. I like Jimbo Fisher, but never won anything in a while. So I think he did win a national championship. I like Jimbo Fisher. I'm not saying I think Jimbo Fisher's a big-time coach, but if you had to say who would you want for the next 5 years, Dan Mullen or Jimbo Fisher, if you factor in personalities and stuff, and I've heard Mullen can be a dick too, but Jimbo can be clearly pretty difficult. I'd probably go Mullen. Just keep in mind, if Nick Saban retires and Dabo turns them down, because of course you did try to get Dabo before you went Lane, I think Lane would have a chance to be the next in line. So if Lane becomes the next head coach at Alabama in the next 3 or 4 years, I just want everyone to acknowledge it here to hear first. One thing we got coming up this weekend, excuse me, not this weekend, but Thursday night, as in Thursday night football, is a game with two guys trending in two different directions. And forever this kind of, I don't know, internet meme, talking point, I don't really know where it started. And listen, I enjoy it too because I like this player a lot, but let Russ cook. Well, right now, the last 2 weeks, Russ has been cooking with no ingredients. His food's been terrible. He's played two of the worst games in recent memory for Russell Wilson. I mean, 2 weeks ago, he had four turnovers. Yesterday or Sunday, he had one of the worst red zone picks you'll see him have ever. Pete Carroll said it was a terrible decision. He threw two interceptions. Six turnovers the last 2 weeks. So right now, Russ is attempting to cook, and like there's no, he doesn't have any firewood to barbecue, and he has no gas at his house. His microwave doesn't work, and the food ain't coming out. And we've learned with Seattle is, I've said from the jump, their defense stinks. And if your defense isn't any good, you aren't a Super Bowl contender. You can make the playoffs, but you can't win the Super Bowl. I think people are going to come around with me and agree. They traded 2 ones and a 2 for a guy who's basically a linebacker pass rusher. The problem is he's your strong safety. Like Jamal Adams, it's looking like they paid 130 cents on the dollar. Potentially more. I mean, he's always banged up. Now, he did make a really good play yesterday. He's a great pass rusher. But the problem is he's your safety. You know? Not ideal. Then on the flip side, you have Kyler Murray, who we all have seen probably the play countless times now. I think that DeAndre Hopkins, who's been one of the best wide receivers in the league for a long period of time, is getting all the credit. And he made a great play. But I heard Sean McDermott say this after the game. I've told these guys over and over, and everyone knows this on a Hail Mary drill. The defensive players are not there to intercept the ball. You bat the ball down. And both players, the one right in front of DeAndre and right behind DeAndre, tried to pick the ball off. Well, DeAndre Hopkins, who's arguably the greatest contested catch wide receiver of my lifetime, easily took the ball away from those two guys. But, and it was a great catch, but sources say that he makes those catches all the time. We've all been watching DeAndre Hopkins. He makes great contested catches. It's his greatest attribute. He does that shit with his eyes closed. The best part about the play by a mile was the quarterback who avoided the rush. There was a guy that was going to sack him. He does like this Allen Iverson crossover move, jukes him out, keeps rolling at a full sprint to his left. Remember, he's a right-handed quarterback and throws a ball basically 55 yards in the air that didn't even have that much arc on it. It was basically a frozen rope that hit his wide receiver in the hands. I truly believe this watching it. It's one of the greatest throws I've ever seen on an NFL field. I always say to this day, the best throw I've ever seen live is 2014 opening game, Candlestick. I guess it would have been 2013. Niners-Packers, Aaron Rodgers rolls to his left across his body, like 30 yards on a rope, hits Jordy Nelson who drags his feet. One of the best, it is the best pass I've ever seen live. I think there's a chance that the best pass in NFL history, when you factor in full speed to your left, and his full speed is faster than everyone else's full speed, he's a right-handed quarterback, throws it on a rope, hits his guy in the hands. Even some of the great Aaron Rodgers Hail Marys, if you remember, did a little bit of scrambling in the back, but when he threw it, he was able to set his feet and there was no one around him, if I remember correctly. This guy is flying out of bounds while he makes the throw behind the 50-yard line. But ultimately, my point is with this, Russell Wilson was going to win the MVP with ease. That no longer is the case. Right now, he would not be the MVP. Now, granted, we don't vote in the middle of November. We vote at the end of the season. Not that I have a vote. But if I did, I would have voted for Russell Wilson 2 weeks ago. As we sit here now, I would not be voting for Russell Wilson. I would be, and listen, Mahomes, leader in the clubhouse, he could just have a very good chance to win it. Aaron Rodgers, still playing well, very good chance to win it. There's another guy that has now thrown his hat in the ring. And that's this little 5'8 quarterback that has 10 rushing touchdowns. 10. Who just hit the game, who just made this throw. Kyler Murray, the Arizona Cardinals are not a very good team. I don't think their head coach is that good. I didn't even think he was that good in that game. I don't trust their defense. But he is extraordinary. He has been an MVP-level player. If he ends up with 30 passing touchdowns and potentially another 20 on the ground, let's just say, let's go conservative, let's say 15. He accounts for 45 touchdowns and gets the Cardinals, who have been the last several years an absolute joke. 2 years ago, had the number one pick in the draft. The year before, were drafting in the early teens. He gets these guys to the playoffs, potentially a chance to win the division. He plays Russell Wilson on Thursday Night Football. Could this guy get some legitimate MVP consideration? Because he should. He has been extraordinary. He is an extraordinary talent. He is this generation's Michael Vick. But he's better. I've been saying it over and over. But I'm telling you, if you want, go back and watch that throw. Because all anyone's talking about, all anyone's tweeting about, and any highlight you see is the catch. The best part of the play is the throw. And what led to the throw. He is an extraordinary talent who is playing. I thought he was going to be good. He is by far exceeding my expectations. I don't care what some of the people with the Cardinals tell you, beside Cliff Kingsbury, they couldn't envision this. And even Cliff, I'd imagine if you were having a cocktail, sit there on the couch and he'd be honest with you, he even might say, I didn't think he was going to be this good of an NFL player. Well, he is. He's extraordinary. And he's got a chance to kind of end Russell Wilson's kind of MVP talk and kind of throw his hat directly into the middle of the ring. Okay, let's bang out a couple Middle Cup mailbag questions. Still need to get a new iPhone because Steve Jobs, or I guess Steve Jobs is no longer with us. Tim Cook and the rest of his cronies are messing with me. A lot of you guys DM'd me and said the same things are happening to you guys, so I feel justified in my craziness. Thought I was losing my mind, but at John Middlecoff is my Instagram account, and that I will look on my iPhone. Hopefully I'll get a new one in the next couple days. They just haven't got them in. Non-quarterback rookie of the year. It's a good question. Tristan Wirfs, I mean, it never goes to an offensive lineman, but he's been really, really good. All these wide receivers have been sweet, right? Jerry Jeudy, Ruggs doesn't have much production, but he's awesome. CeeDee Lamb was good until the quarterback got hurt. Justin Jefferson makes plays. Brandon Ayuk's been a stud. I'll go with Wirfs. Tampa's had a good draft. I mean, Winfield too. Winfield's been a stud. I'll go with Wirfs. Sometimes you got to give the big heavy some love. They just get no love. They get paid, but they don't get any love. I never miss a podcast. I know I've heard you speak favorably of Eddie O, but as an LSU fan, I need to know what the heck is going on. Programs don't turn south this quick. Clemson, Ohio State, and Bama lose tons of guys to the NFL, just like LSU did. But they don't fall off a cliff like we have. Any insight? I think it's pretty simple. Ed Ogeron, Nick Saban is the brains of the operation. He can coach the defense. He's running all the recruiting. Everything revolves around him. Last year, Ed Ogeron makes a big deal for that university in recruiting. He is a great recruiter. He's a good motivator. Guys like him. He knows nothing about scheme. He's not the defensive coordinator. He surely isn't the offensive coordinator. Nick Saban, at the end of the day, is neither. But it's the defense is his baby. And nothing, offense or defensively, goes on that field without him having a hand in it. Here's the other thing Saban has done for a long period of time. When good head coaches get fired, he puts them on the staff as analysts because his coordinators always get jobs, and then those guys become his coordinators. So he always has a pipeline. Ed Ogeron, to no fault of his own, They had a historic season, lost all of his coaches, his offensive coach and his defensive coach. To me, it's less about the players. LSU's players are always sweet. It's about the coaches. The losing the defensive coordinator for Pelini, like, Pelini stinks. The dude they had last year was a big-time coach. Like, Joe Brady, it's pretty clear watching the Panthers, he's a stud. Saban went from McElwain to Lane to now he's got Sark. Like, his coordinators are always sweet. The Loxley, they just always have big-time coordinators. Defensively, Muschamp. Think about the guys he's had. Kirby. He just gets high-level coordinators. That is the key to their success. Clemson, they just pay the guys like $3 million to be coordinators. They don't lose anybody. He's had the same offensive and defensive coordinator the whole time. The defensive coordinator makes $2.5 million. The OC, who's kind of in the mix for offensive coordinator jobs in the NFL, and he's going to get one, I think his name's Tony Elliott, he makes huge coin. Those guys make, I mean, Brett Venables is paid like he's the head coach at like Fresno State, but he's the defensive coordinator at Clemson. And you know what? I said this about Todd Bowles. There's nothing wrong. Like, this isn't, you're not the middle manager at Safeway. You're not making $75K. You don't aspire to get to, like, run your own Safeway. When you're the defensive coordinator for an offensive head coach, and you're getting $2.5 million, and you're winning national championships all the time, it's an incredible job. Like, those guys have great jobs. They don't leave Clemson. Ohio State is just a better program than LSU. I mean, it's just a fact. I mean, I'd say consistently over the last couple decades, Ohio State's the number one program in the country. They have been consistently the best. I know they had a moment when Tressel got in trouble, but I'd say the last two decades, they have consistently been the best. And they look unreal now. Obviously, Bama with Saban for a decade has been unreal. Clemson with Dabo has been unreal. But Ohio State now, we've seen with multiple coaches, kick the shit out of people. Tressel, Urban, obviously, and Ryan Day now. Like, they're the best program, you know? And LSU, like, let's call a spade a spade. They are an elite program. They get elite players. But when it comes to success, like, they've had a little harder time. They haven't had quarterbacks. It just kind of is what it is, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, Ed Ogeron is just not Nick Saban. And so if you look at it like that, like, look at Kirby Smart. Like, his team's not as good this year. I think the second best coach in the SEC is Dan Mullen. Or I think Jimbo's pretty good, too, but I think Dan Mullen's really good. Should Big Ben be in the MVP consideration? Someone hit me up. I honestly didn't watch a snap of Steelers-Bengals. That was an early morning game. I had the Masters on in red zone. Maybe I watched a couple snaps. I saw the Notre Dame kid get a touchdown. But I was much more locked into the Masters. And someone DM'd me and's like, bro, you need to watch that game because it was cold. I have nothing but respect for the AFC North. Even the bad teams like the Bengals, I guess the Browns aren't bad. But as a California guy who despises the cold, I respect the hell out of people that play in 10 degrees when it's raining and snowing. Like, those guys are badasses. And the DMer said, you gotta look, Ben's ball in that, you know, just the elements going right through the wind. Burrow's ball kind of hung up. And I haven't watched it yet, but the reality is, like, Burrow doesn't have a great arm. And that is one problem in that the elements, like, Lamar doesn't have a great arm. You know, Flacco obviously became a terrible player, but he had a couple years there. Like, you need to have a big-time arm to succeed in that division. Carson Palmer with the Bengals. Ben for 15 years. Like, it's a grown-ass man's division because it is freezing cold in all four venues. Certain divisions, like the AFC West, for example. In Kansas City and Denver in December and in late November, it can get really cold. In L.A., it's never going to get cold, one, because it's L.A., and two, because they play in a dome. And now in Vegas, they also play in a dome. So it's not like two places are cold. But in the AFC North, the entire place is cold. Cincinnati, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. Like, and those are tough-ass towns. So I don't think Big Ben can win the MVP, but he'd be their team MVP if he leads them right to the playoffs, which he's going to. Obviously, they're undefeated, but I just mean like a legit chance at the Super Bowl. What the hell you think was Lamar thinking? These are not Brady's Patriots, just with Cam at quarterback. I'd bet they're first in the AFC with Brady. No chance. The Patriots are not very good. I just think that the Ravens ran into kind of a buzzsaw. Their offense is sputtering. They're in shambles. But they would not be very good with Brady either. At all. I mean, Brady, the offensive skill guys Cam's dealing with. I just watched probably the second half of the Sunday night game. Cam made some plays with his legs. Like, they just don't have any weapons. They're a running, run-oriented team, try to play defense. Brady, they'd be terrible with Brady. Let me rephrase that. They would not be any. They'd be maybe have one more win with Brady, but maybe not. I don't think they'd be any good. Okay. Adios. Appreciate it. Everyone listening, have a good week. And I'll see you Friday. So I think we got a really good Thursday night game against the Seattle, Arizona. Can't wait. Keep your head up. And talk to you guys soon. Peace. See ya.